testosterone.
Nightlight with Peach Wabba, weeknights 7 till 9 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app.
And here's Heather with the weather.
Well, it's beautiful out there, sunny and 75, almost a little chilly in the shade. Now, let's get a read on the inside of your car. It is hot. You've only been parked a short time, and it's already 99 degrees in there. Let's not leave children in the back seat while running errands. It only takes a few minutes for their body temperatures to rise, and that could be fatal.
Cars get hot, fast, and can be deadly. Never leave a child in a car. A message from NHTSA and the Ad Council.
The Maggie Dawn Show.
Brian, do you buy your tickets on Ticketmaster?
Whether I want to or not, I do.
Fella Devan. We're going to talk a little bit about monopolies.
Live Nation and Ticketmaster together control 80% of the primary ticketing market. They have the market power to bully people into submission. And then you trap consumers into basically having to pay like junk fees that are basically created to create profit for the company.
The Maggie Dawn Show. Weekdays from 2 till 4 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app.
You are never far away from your favorite radio station. We're always streaming on TuneIn and the Civic Media app. And if you missed your favorite show or game, listen to a podcast of it anytime on the app or our website, civicmedia.us. It's easy to listen to your favorite local radio station anytime. Download the Civic Media app from the Apple or Google Play Store, then listen live or whenever you want from anywhere for free.
We've all felt left out. And for people who move to this country, that feeling lasts more than a moment. We can change that. Learn how at belongingbeginswithus.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council.
This is your hometown radio, Refreshed, keeping you informed, entertained, and connected locally across the Civic Media Network.
Pizza's here.
Oh, great. I'd love some, but I'm worried about my stomach issues.
If you're worried about having diarrhea, gas, bloating, stomach pain, or loose, oily stools, it may not just be stomach issues. It could be a condition called exocrine pancreatic insufficiency, or EPI. With EPI, the pancreas doesn't release enough enzymes to break down food, but EPI is manageable. Use the symptom checker on identifyepi.com and talk to your doctor. That's identifyepi.com. Sponsored by AbbVie.
The big winners are in for the Scotty Summer Contest.
Exciting. Let's listen to the calls.
Hi, who's this?
It's Tori.
You're one of our grand prize winners.
All right, man. Great to be here this morning.
We got some good news for you.
Okay.
You are one of our grand prize winners.
Really?
Yes.
Awesome.
Winning is fun. Just ask Tammy from Baraboo and Tori from Kewaunee.
Thank you. That's great.
Listen for future chances to text and win on your local Civic Media radio station and the app.
I'm Lisa Hale with WISS News. Your news roundup in quick podcast form. You can find it anytime at the WISS website at wiss.fm.
This is Oshkosh Air Support, WISS.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
This is Busted Pencils, fully leaded education talk. Here are your hosts, Dr. Tim Slecker and Dr. Johnny Lupinacci, educated educators talking education.
Of course it is. Well, maybe it's not. It's just Tim. Teacher Hallie, Educators Amplified, Busted Pencils, Special Night, Educated Educators, Talking Education, Amplifying the Voices of Educators. It's just Teacher Hallie in the house. Teacher Joanna and Johnny Lupinacci, Dr. Johnny Lupinacci. Well, you know, occasionally, sometimes, there are other things that come up. And when that happens, that's what's great about having a team of four, typically on a Wednesday, is that we can still show up and really kick some, you know, butt. That would be butt, not the other thing. Teacher Hallie, how are you?
I'm doing well. I'm excited for it to be just the two of us. I mean, let's go. We can still riff.
Hey,
right?
I think we can. I mean, typically the whole idea is that people are going to like, oh, my God, who's going to shut the two of them up?
Well, I'll shut you up and you shut me up.
Okay, we'll go back and forth. You know what though, Teacher Hallie, just a reminder. You know the Busted Pencils? It's sponsored by the Minocqua Brewing Company, who sued the state of Wisconsin to end its crappy voucher system that hurts public schools. Minocqua Brewing Company is making Wisconsin great again, one beer at a time. Check out MinocquaBrewingCompany.com to see where you can buy their progressive beer. I didn't know if you'd forgotten that, Hallie.
No, thank you for the reminder.
Okay. And Sherry from HorrorCon, thank you so much for saying hi in the text all the time. Good evening, boys and girls. Well, yeah, or boy and girls, or yeah, you know, however, us, them, everybody here. Oh, it's Busted Pencils. It's Fully Leaded Education Talk. The number is 855-752-4842. Special Educators Amplified. We've got some topics here. Teacher Hallie, but today, you know, first of all, it is a holiday.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Juneteenth, right?
Yep. Juneteenth.
Happy Juneteenth. Now, we're going to pose a question to the listeners out there, yeah, or anybody. But first of all, you know, we're just saying Juneteenth celebration, marking the day in Texas when slaves were read that they were free, you know, so, mm-hmm, this holiday, it's a holiday. And it is, as Anya pointed out before the show started, you know, banks are closed on Juneteenth. So it's a holiday. The question, though, in today's world that we currently occupy,
2024.
Oh, sad. If school were in session, would the public schools be acknowledging Juneteenth as a holiday? Would we be teaching the students about the history of Juneteenth? Or would we find us all wrapped up in turmoil because, you know, Juneteenth is just one of those critical race theory topics that is meant to divide us and split us up, and we're not going to go down that rabbit hole? I don't know. That's a question. You kind of posed that this morning thinking, mm-hmm, about that. So if school were in session right now, would there be the holiday? I think that answer is probably, yeah, it would still be there. The thing, yeah, that we're more kind of intrigued or possibly throwing out to the listener for you to call in and let us know is that in 2024, with all of the attacks on what are called critical race theory, the truth, divisive concepts, mm-hmm, would Juneteenth be framed as one of those divisive concepts? And would we be having discussions about whether we should even be talking about it? I think it's a powerful question.
Oh, I do too. I mean, and I have theories myself.
Mm-hmm.
I think it, you know, because Wisconsin is a battleground state, I think it definitely depends on where you live, like what county you live in, how red or blue it is.
Mm.
You know what I mean? And how, like, and then I also think, like, so if you're in more of a blue county, I would say, yes, they'll be talking about it. There's probably an assembly or a celebration or an honoring that, like, the whole district does.
Right.
I feel like in a red county, it's like crickets, and or dependent on the teacher.
Hmm.
You know?
Yeah.
But I won't even put it just on teachers, because what I see often living in a red county is that we have school boards now that are very much running with their power and, like, using it like, I don't even know, like, that, like, the power is all theirs. And I think that they're very good at inciting fear in professionals.
I think that when you hit on that, the question, yeah, of would, how many teachers would feel threatened,
right,
with the idea of going, what do I do today on Juneteenth? Can I teach, right, this? I've now been a teacher for the past, let's just imagine, you know, 10 years, yep, 15 years. But in the last, mm-hmm, 3 years, yep, I have been in classrooms and have heard school board meetings and have read news articles. And I'm not so sure I want to go down in that direction, because who knows if I might not offend somebody. And so it's that chilling effect.
Well, who knows, like, if I'll get quote unquote caught.
Right.
And then let go.
Yeah. Wow. Right away. Caller Mark from Prairie du Sac. Mark. Mark's on the line. What's happening, Mark?
Yeah, thanks. And talking about the Civil War, it just brings back to mind, and this is going back some 50 years ago now, when I was in 11th grade, and my teacher, Bernie Tomczak, lectured on the Civil War. I particularly remember the lecture when he talked about the Battle of Shiloh and the peach blossoms dropping on the dead and wounded during the Battle of Shiloh. I mean, it's just sad that, you know, American history is being forgotten, and they're hesitant to teach about it. And certainly, you know, Juneteenth, it should be a teachable moment, because it took that long, even though they probably were full aware in Galveston. The officials were probably fully aware in Galveston of the fact that the South had lost and the Emancipation Proclamation had been made. They chose to do that until the Federals actually arrived to enforce the Emancipation Proclamation. I mean, it is just, and that should be recognized as well, because there's, you know, that, yes, and the fact of the matter is, as soon as Jim Crow ended, I mean, as soon as Reconstruction ended, Jim Crow replaced it.
Right.
And that's something that is not taught, and Jim Crow is still with us, and its legacy is still with us.
Yeah,
I think, Mark, yeah, you know, it's one of those, too. You make me think about this, and Teacher Hallie, because there's so many ways that this comes up, because you hear Mark going, like, there's so much history. You know, it's not just Juneteenth. It's like, why Juneteenth? Why do we celebrate? Yep. What's the history? What was the intentionality of keeping people suppressed to even knowing that fact, that it took that long for that message to get delivered? Was there an intentionality to keep people enslaved as long as they could? You know, and that's part of the history. It's part of the story. And I think that's where you would start to find people saying, you know what? We can have Juneteenth. We can have a parade. We can have a picnic. Yep. But we're not talking about the facts, though, because those facts make me uncomfortable. And if you're a teacher out there inflicting uncomfort on people, watch out, because the history police are going to come for you. It's Busted Pencils, fully leaded education talk, Educators Amplified, Teacher Hallie in the house. 855-752-4842 is the number if you want to join us, just like Mark did. Mark, really appreciate your call.
Yeah.
And you know what? Yeah, Anya, let's jump in right away. You know, you volunteered there.
I guess,
Go for it.
So I was just sort of sitting here listening to this, and I think it's important, right? The difference between the Emancipation Proclamation, here's Abraham Lincoln saying, we're going to free the slaves, versus that news finally getting, you know, because until the news gets to these folks, unless they all know about it and subsequently choose to walk off of the where they're being kept and they could be subjected to violence, right? The Emancipation Proclamation means nothing until these folks get to leave. So this is kind of similar in a way to why there's International Holocaust Remembrance Day, but then there's also Yom HaShoah. And International Holocaust I can't get my words out today. International Holocaust Remembrance Day falls on the day actually that the Soviet military basically got to Auschwitz to liberate it, whereas Yom HaShoah is like is more set on the day that we actually see like prisoners, incarcerated individuals of the Holocaust getting out and being able to talk about their liberation. The difference between the story of the liberator, the soldier, or the president who does the thing and gets there with the guns and the military versus, okay, and the folks, the people who needed to be freed because someone decided to make them unfree, when is their day? And it's kind of similar. It's like, I don't want to equate things to be the same.
No,
similar.
Well, what's similar on this one, the way we're talking about this, is the richness that comes around these stories, the history, and how you can relate, you know, going like, well, this happened and then this, and you make, you know, that's what you do. And I know, you know, Johnny, you know, past social studies teachers, both of us, I mean, this is the type of things you want to engage students in constantly. Yeah. Is comparison. How is this like this? How is mm-hmm. this not like this? Mm-hmm. How are they, you know, and let's talk about it. And so, yeah, think mm-hmm. about that. We're putting forth the question then here today on Juneteenth, would there, if school were in session, would there be these critical analysis, these discussions based around the history, or would it be potentially in today, 2024, kind of just churned into, you know, hey, it's another holiday, it's another day for a parade or for us to, you know, listen to African drumming music and we're going to walk around. But other than that, though, we're not going to dare come close. Teacher Hallie.
Yeah, it makes me think about, like, right, it's what we're faced now as educators is this, like, we're either allowed to be the professional, like, where we can give the critical thinking and help, you know, encourage students to think and inquire on all of this stuff, right? Even when Anya was talking, like, I got chills. Like, I love thinking like that. Kids just eat that up, right? Because it's making them think. Versus, well, what fun fact can I just give about Juneteenth?
Right.
You know, like, it's really stripping away the professionalism when we have all this.
That's the question. That's the question we're asking with Educators Amplified tonight. You know, Juneteenth, if school were in session, would we be teaching it or would we be just kind of having a little bit of a fun day? Busted Pencils, fully leaded education talk, 855-752-4842. Give us a call. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Oshkosh Air Support, WISS, the Fox Valley's home of Mino and the Mayor.
Hey there, it's Carrie Joy with your Work Money Minute. I've got a kid probably heading off to college in about a year and a half, and I'm doing everything I can to help her build her credit score. Now, one of the tips I was very excited to put into practice is adding my daughter as an authorized user on my most perfectly paid off credit card account. The idea here is that credit card companies report the payment histories of everyone with a card in their name, including the authorized users. That way, your kid benefits from your good credit habits and the length of your credit history, and gets a boost to their credit score right out of the gate. Now, the rub is that not all card issuers report all this info, so it's essential to check with your card and make sure they report. And remember, this goes both ways. Good credit behavior boosts scores, but any slip-ups like missed payments or late payments, that hurts them. For more money tips, check out workmoney.org. In the meantime, this is Carrie Joy saying, take good care.
You're listening to Oshkosh Air Support, WISS.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Just the two of us, Busted Pencils, fully leaded education talk, educated educators talking education, 855-752-4842. Oh, you know, hey, we said
you can make anything into a rock song.
Hey, best music anywhere. We say it all the time. Busted Pencils, you know, you're going to get some type of surprise. Juneteenth, though, question, you know, if today, well, you know, if we were still school in session, what would the students, the teachers, the schools, the school districts be doing around this day? And we kind of framed it as this potentially problematic in 2024 because there's a story here that might make some people uncomfortable. You know, so is it Emancipation Day? Is it Freedom Day? These are questions right away, right? That somebody could go, well, wait a minute. No, you know, we can have hot dogs. I'll even allow the drumming African drummers to come in and do a little celebration, but we are not going to be talking about the specifics of Juneteenth. Why did it take so long for the message to get to the slaves? Why did it take so long for us to actually have a holiday around Juneteenth? Because those topics, if we start getting into those types of discussions, Teacher Hallie, somebody might be offended.
Yeah, and I think it's what's wild to me is that, like, it's got to be deeper than uncomfortable and offended. You know what I mean? Like, for people to want to get in positions of power and to, like, eliminate this type of conversation, this type of critical thinking, this type of conversation is just so deep to me. Like, it is to me, like, it's just an attack on, like, the profession of education and, like, really an attack on, like, the children's minds and, like, the capacities of, like, where you could go with their minds. Because, again, like I said, I just keep sitting here thinking about how this has so much to do with taking away the autonomy of teachers. And people will be like, well, I don't want my teacher to have autonomy. Yeah. You know, I'm like, well, why not? Because they're professionals. Yeah. You know, like, we should want them to be able to take a conversation and route it wherever it needs to go. It actually makes me think about a shout out to a teacher I won't name because I think this was fear inducing, but my child's second grade teacher, and it was around Martin Luther King Day. So related, but not related. But essentially, a conversation about racism came up, you know, with 7 and 8 year olds. Okay. Right. And students in the class shared about how they had experienced racism in their life. And so my daughter came home, who is white, and she was just, like, beside herself, you know, like, she's very empathic, where she's just like, why would people do that? That is awful, Mom. You know, and then she's like, I was crying in class. But to me, I was like, what an amazing conversation. Mm-hmm. As I'm listening to my, I don't remember if she was 7 or 8 at the time, my 8-year-old be able to tell me about what racism is in a very, like, developmentally appropriate 8-year-old way. Mm-hmm. I was like, dang, that teacher knows how to navigate this conversation. So just being who I am, I emailed her being like, thank you so much. Like, this is why I send my children to public school. Those type of conversations that just come up that you can navigate professionally is amazing. Mm. And her response back to me was like, do you mind sending this or, like, forwarding it on to the principal? Because I'm getting, like, my principal is like, basically telling me I need to send an apology to all the parents, a clarification about why I talked about it, because she's so scared that the school board will find out and then they'll be upset. You know, so that teacher was, like, mortified,
right?
And, like, walking away being scared versus, and then I did find out later from talking to other parents and then encouraging them, like, email her. You know, but it was, and they were excited that the conversation happened, but I'm just like, this is the environment that teachers are teaching in of, like. Well,
so imagine, then today, it's Juneteenth, if we were in school, and I was saying, when you're sitting there and what you described though, with your daughter in that though, is exactly I can see the other parent going, how dare you send my daughter home in tears, feeling bad about being white? What in the heck are you doing
I'm interrupting you because what's wild to me is that, like, I think we're so conditioned now to think about, like, the quote unquote other parent, but I'm telling you that class of, you know, random class of probably 30 second graders, there weren't parents that were like, lock her up, you know, like, nobody complained.
Right.
You know, so that's where I just get like, why does our brain go to like, but we need to be careful about the what if situation of the one parent that might say something or might find out, you know, I'm like, it's taking away the professionalism and a true public education for kids.
And that is what you're explaining, though, is that's the reality of today, is that
how much.
I know how much can be stifled without actually any harm being done or anything like that, right? You know, it's Educators Amplified Night, Teacher Hallie, Dr. Tim Slecker, and Anya on the boards. Another text from Sherry from Oricon. It needs to be uncomfortable, but told, right on. I mean, that's the reality here. We got to do that. And just think about that, you know, because the reality of the potential that none of the parents were associated with you and your daughter and all that, like you're all fine with that, but it doesn't matter anymore because there is a story out there of a teacher who, you know, got put into the wet dungeon with the rats and made to hang out there for days as their punishment for daring to make somebody. But the story gets out that this did happen, right? And so then the anxiety response on that then is to catastrophize way above and beyond the reality that'll typically go. And then you stifle yourself. And people, you know, people say, well, what's the problem? You don't, if it's true, you don't have, it's like, no, you understand this silences people very powerfully without actually doing any type of harm. I remember that I would my first couple of years teaching have some, you know, it's like, you're going to get in trouble, Tim. You're going to get in trouble. And I kept wondering, I'm like, how do you know that? Where is the evidence that trouble has occurred? And it must have been so horrible because we have no evidence of anybody having ever gotten in trouble. But the fear of getting in trouble has created such a backlash that people go, hey, you know, and I would even say, I'm like, when did this person get in trouble? What happened that was so horrific that the rest of you now have decided that we're going to actually warn people about what happens when they get in trouble? Juneteenth, Busted Pencils, Educators Amplified, Fully Leaded Education Talk, all those things, Educated Educators Talking Education, 855-752-4842. Do a little bit more Juneteenth, but hey, the other thing though too, if you're an administrator out there and you're hiring a consultant, we want to talk to you when we get back.
You're listening to Oshkosh Air Support WISS, the Valley's home for Nightlight with Peach Wabba.
ABC News, I'm Brian Clark. The early summer heat wave continues to impact tens of millions of people, says ABC's Allison Cossack.
The weekend begins with more than 100 million Americans under heat alerts in 15 states across the country. Amtrak suspending service for hours.
The train turned off and we were stuck on the tracks for I think maybe an hour or two with no air conditioning.
In New York and New Jersey, the rate of ER visits for heat-related symptoms up 800%.
Heat-related visits to emergency rooms in New York and New Jersey have spiked. The U.S. ambassador to Mexico said that U.S. inspections of avocados and mangoes in the Mexican state of Michoacan will gradually resume. They were suspended after an assault by gangs on inspectors. And the Edmonton Oilers have won three straight games to force a seventh game of the NHL Stanley Cup Final. This is ABC News.
You can always continue the conversation on social media. Share your thoughts when you find and follow Civic Media on Facebook, X, and Instagram.
The Brewers lose in San Diego. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. The Brewers lost to the Padres 9-5 at Petco Park. The Padres with 9 runs off of 15 hits. Brewers manager Pat Murphy.
They hit the ball tremendous tonight. The Padres were tremendous. They've been, since that win in Philadelphia, they've been playing great, swinging the bat great.
Brewers reliever Hobie Milner charged with the loss. Hockey, the Stanley Cup Finals. The Oilers beat the Panthers again, this time 5-1. So now the series moves back to Florida for a final game set. Monday night, face-off 7 o'clock. NFL, the Packers training camp now a month away. I asked Romeo Dobbs if this is a good time to finish memorizing the playbook.
Yeah, growth is everything, you know. I mean, coach always says it, it's either you're getting better or getting worse, and I believe that every guy in our room has gotten better throughout the course of this offseason. And again, to make it short, I'm looking forward to it.
That's Packers wide receiver Romeo Dobbs with sports. I'm Mike Clemens.
Enjoying this local program? Find the complete Civic Media lineup at civicmedia.us or the Civic Media app.
With your forecast, I'm Corey Hartman. For today, showers and thunderstorms. Some could have heavy rain, highs near 77, a bit breezy at times. For tonight, showers and storms, low near 63. For Sunday, partly sunny and a high near 77. Mostly sunny on Monday, with highs in the low 80s.
Currently, 66 degrees.
If you sail or enjoy water sports, why not consider a donation to International Youth Sailing of Oshkosh at Miller's Bay on Lake Winnebago? This group has passionately built a community of recreational sailing for kids and families in northeastern Wisconsin for 16 years. A donation from you would help us to continue to educate and enrich the lives of children in Oshkosh through sailing. To make a donation or to volunteer, please visit us at sailoshkosh.com.
Do you have a loved one in a nursing home? California mega millionaire Eric Hovde has some bad news for you. He doesn't think they have long to live. It's true. In a recent interview, Hovde said, if you're in a nursing home, you only have a 5-6 month life expectancy. Almost nobody in a nursing home is at a point to vote. That's shocking. But it gets worse. One of Hovde's companies is named a co-defendant in a wrongful death suit from an incident at a California senior living facility. He even referred to himself as an expert in the nursing home business. Yikes, that doesn't sound like the kind of expert we need. Call Eric Hovde at his California office, 714-730-4444. Tell him that Wisconsin seniors deserve to vote and get the care they deserve. Paid for by A Better Wisconsin Together Incorporated.
This update is sponsored by UW Credit Union. For every stage of life, UW Credit Union is here for every you. Fans, here's your Quick Trip to the Ballpark ticket offer. Spend $200 at participating Quick Trip locations and get a free Terrace Reserve ticket to a 2024 Brewers home game. Check brewers.com/quicktrip for more details. Join UW Credit Union at uwcu.org. Insured by NCUA.
Earl Ingram.
Monday morning, join me as I stroll through memory lane and take in the sounds of the Motor City. It's Motown Mondays.
The Earl Ingram Show, weekday mornings at 9.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Busted Pencils, fully leaded education talk, educated educators talking education. Wednesday, educators amplified in the house, teacher Hallie, teacher Joanna, you know, and Johnny tonight. Other things have come up, and that is, you know, again, family first all the time. Teacher Hallie, though, you know, Juneteenth today, we kind of posed the beginning of the show to kind of, you know, if school were in session today, you know, what would be happening in schools? Would there be teaching about Juneteenth, about the history, about why it took so long for the message to get to those slaves in Texas? Would we be engaging, or would it be simply in today, 2024? Hey, you know what? I don't want to make anybody uncomfortable, so we're just going to have hot dogs and announce that it's a holiday.
Yep. I mean, gosh, it bothers me that that's like how it, you know, like how things roll, you know. I also think about, like, I always think about, because we're in this type of environment right now, like, is there anyone that's there to like defend or be like, nope, this is what we should be doing? You know what I mean? Like, it's very based on like, here's what we should do, here's what we shouldn't do, versus like just what's felt mentally appropriate. Like, is anyone going to come out here and try to like defend that, you know? And to me, I could be like, oh, that could be like an administrator's role to, you know, to preserve the autonomy or preserve the professionalism of the educators in the classroom. Mm-hmm. But I don't know if they view that as their role or not. You know,
well, that's a whole other question that you bring up there, too. What does an administrator believe their role is in these situations? Mm-hmm. You know, lots of administrators, and let's use that word, and some people, you mean the leadership? Potentially, administrators, yeah, are sometimes by default the leaders. However, if you were a leader in this situation, I'm pretty sure you would, yeah, advocate for the autonomy. Potentially, though, this is one of those situations where would district administration want to consult an outside source to potentially give them guidance?
Yeah. I mean, so this is what's crazy about a school is that like the hierarchy is stacked, right? Where it's like teachers at, well, students at the bottom, then teachers, then building administration, then district administration, you know, and district administration more and more. I used to think like superintendent was at the top, but I'm seeing more and more with these cultures of like fear, essentially, that they're like kind of superintendents are kind of like not lowering themselves very low, but kind of being like, we work with the cabinet of the pupil services director and the athletic director and the, I made up this title director, you know, so that it's like this little team of people. So no one can say like, I said it.
Yeah.
And then they can be like, oh, we hired this consultant who said dot, dot, dot. Right. And so what's really just has been very interesting to me as an educator is seeing how many consultants, like the superintendent gets to hire a consultant, the pupil services director gets to hire a consultant, the curriculum and instruction director gets to hire a consultant. You know, like we have consultants for all of our quote unquote leaders. And right. What is that about?
When's the last time you as a teacher got to hire a consultant?
Well, sometimes I'll be like, I don't need a consultant.
No. I know. I just had to throw that out there. I love Anya's comment. Where she put in there.
I was wondering, does someone get to be the director of making up titles if there's all these titles going around? And if there is, who is their consultant? Where do they go for their info?
Right. I mean, schools are so successfully marketed to that, you know, Google has a consultant, you know, like for an example, but also just like, oh, I'm a consultant of, are you having trouble with how to talk with your educators about special education? I'm a consultant for that. Oh, are you having difficulties with your financials in your district? Oh, I'm a consultant for that.
Okay, but you're making me think, though, on this now, too, about that, because I start to wonder about, do you need a consultant or shouldn't that be your job responsibility and shouldn't you have the professional authority and autonomy to be making those types of decisions? And then, you know, we're talking about school budgets, you know, where the heck does all this money come from for the consultants? Never do I hear that there's not enough money for the consultant. There's not enough money for, you know, the school band. There's not enough money for the field trip. There's not enough money for food. There's not enough money for teacher raises. Mm-hmm. Okay. But the consultant class, and I will say I have worked as a consultant though myself. And so I know. Yeah. You know, But asking the question, though, at what point should you be the one responsible for the work, have the authority and have the leadership skills to actually enact tough decisions that you shouldn't need a consultant? And if you need a consultant, is that really just evidence you're not really good?
Yeah, I don't know. I just, I would love if a district administrator or even a building administrator called in and gave us perspective on, like, one, have you ever had a consultant? Two, what do you think that your role is in all of this? Like, you know, I just, because right from my lens, I'm like, we hire a superintendent at, you know, like $150,000 plus. And I think that's, I mean, right. That was really lowballing it. And then how much is a consultant, you know, that like you, that they hire in for themselves, but yet all I ever hear is an educator, like the most expensive line items in the budget is educators, you know? So like, that's why we can never pay all the educators because they're so expensive. And I would love to like proportion it out of like, if there's X number of people in your district office, how much of your funding, what percentage goes to that and their consultants versus, you know, whatever. There's got to be, you know, I'm sure unions have done it and, you know, figured it out. But it it's actually terrifying, you know, that like when schools have budget issues, that what gets cut is things that affect students versus things that affect one superintendent and their consultant or whatever.
Well, you think about that, you know, how do we make budget decisions? And some of those things, it's like, well, you know, we can do away with funding the kindergarten field trip this year. And you're like, well, why are we making that decision? Well, I can't cut my consultant. You know, and again, and you, like you frame, you frame this, Teacher Hallie, by too saying, you know, and if you are a district administrator out there and you're listening to us right now, you know, give us a call, 855-752-4842. Either, you know, validate, verify what we're talking about, challenge us on it, because we're really, you know, we're asking these questions because, as Teacher Hallie points out, you know, it always seems like, particularly when it comes down to the budget, and if the budget's tight, which, hey, guess what? It's a public school. I don't know that there hasn't ever been anything but a tight budget. When you make those decisions, and this is a question that, you know, I kind of posed before this show, are the consultants' salaries, should they be disclosed as part of the financial situation that a school is in? And if we did know that, would we know, would we say, well, you know what, it's not that much money, I guess we should cut the kindergarten field trip? I mean, how are these decisions made? So lots of issues coming up here as we bring this, you know, bring this forward. Lots of different ways to throw it. But, you know, are you an administrator? Do you need a consultant? And if you do need a consultant, is that really an indication that you're not that qualified that you actually have to hire a consultant? Or is it an indicator that you're not that great of a leader and you just want to hire somebody who can tell you that here's what you need to say, and then you can then go to the masses or the team and say, the consultant said? Or even this possibility of going, it's just like, you know, how do we make decisions around making important declarations going all the way back to the Juneteenth? I could see this situation being, you know, a district school, an administrator, a group of leaders, the curriculum director, the director of making up titles, all getting together and going, you know what, you know how we could solve this problem? We'd hire a consultant.
I can see, you know, from my experience in the current climate and culture that we're in, it is a lot of like people in the quote unquote leadership roles pointing to others or pointing to the team of like, so instead of it being like, I individually made this decision, if we hire consultants or work as a team or whatever, we can say things like, oh, well, the consultant recommended this, you know, like it almost gives that like pass or that like you can't ever pin anybody down to get to the root of the issue. And I think that's why we're just, these issues just aren't going away and we're just taking band-aids to try to cover things up. Mm. Or like when teachers are like, I'd love to do something on Juneteenth that's meaningful. Mm-hmm. It turns into like, well, let me ask X, Y, or Z, or the team decided this, or the consultant sent out the communication and that's what we're doing in our district. You know, it just allows this, like, I guess, land of zero responsibility or zero like ownership, or like zero, like I can just like wipe my hands.
That's why you pay good money for the ability to offload the decision making. That's what's happening in a lot of these situations.
It feels like.
Yeah. You know, and I'll come back and say, I have worked and I still do some work as a consultant. So anybody who's out there listening going, why the heck is Tim? I'm like, I hire myself in situations to come in and, you know, it's more around a group and putting together strategic planning and the idea. And so, you know, I see places where I understand why you do have consultants, but I can point out though what you just said though, Hallie, which is, you know what? A lot of times we hire consultants to make the hard decisions so that we don't have to be the ones to deliver the bad news. And that I'm framing that. So, you know, if you're listening out there and you know the situation I'm describing, 855-752-4842, you know, you've been part of consultanted. There, I just made up that word, consultanted, you know, so, you know, and possibly even to the point where you find yourself being told by your boss, hey, sorry, but the consultant said, and this is the decision we're making. And boy, how does that feel to be told by somebody who's a leader? And I say leader, and I'm not really sure you're a leader when you offload decision making to consultants. Hallie, before we break, I see you got something.
This just sounds like a really crazy ball of hierarchy and bureaucracy to me. You know, a couple of weeks ago, we were talking about power with versus power over. If we had a power with structure, things could be so much better.
The old distributed leadership, my goodness, sharing decision making. Right. When you were talking about a team, though, in fact, when we come back, I want to throw that out there because guess what? You do have qualified people to make these decisions. We're going to talk about them when we get back. More Busted Pencils next.
Oshkosh Air Support, WISS.
Look up cheese curds. You'll find this basic definition. Wet pieces of curdled milk.
Huh?
Well, it should also include the word delicious. As we continue to celebrate June Dairy Month, do you know how much milk is needed to make 1 pound of cheese curds? 16 ounces, 64 ounces, or 160 ounces, 10 pounds of milk? The answer coming up.
It actually is a sound of freshness.
Rachel Kerr is talking about squeaky curds. She's with the Dairy Farmers of Wisconsin and a bit of a cheese nerd.
Those elastic protein strands rub against the enamel of your teeth and create that characteristic sound.
The squeak turns stretchy when battered and deep fried. Some believe the idea to fry globs of cheese happened by accident. I consider it a happy accident. Okay, did you guess? It takes 10 pounds of milk, which is a big gallon jug plus a little bit more, to make 1 pound of squeaky cheese curds. Call me your curd girl for this slice of Wisconsin. I'm Terry Barr for the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to Oshkosh Air Support, WISS, home for Matt Nair on air.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Busted Pencils, fully leaded education talk, educated educators talking education. Wednesday night, educators amplified in the house. Teacher Hallie, Dr. Tim Slicker, Anya. Yeah, the three of us, we're hanging out on Juneteenth talking about, yeah, what will we do on Juneteenth if we were in school? And then the possibility of, well, this would be a decision we would turn over to a consultant to make. And how, you know, you pointed out to me one of the things that I think, and I've seen this, the use of consultants to essentially keep hierarchy in place. Mm-hmm. Because you were talking about a team, right? And so I'm imagining a school, okay? Mm-hmm. And I'm imagining three kindergarten teachers, three first grade teachers, three second grade teachers, a speech pathologist, a special education coordinator, all the way up through fifth grade. That's a team.
Yeah.
Of really smart people who are all qualified to be an educator, to be a decision maker. Why don't we ask you guys to do this? And why do we offload this to a consultant? And I'm posing that question because, is it because we don't want to give you the autonomy to be decision makers?
I mean, that's how I interpret it. Honestly. But like, I'm open. You know, funny enough, I kept using the word team. And now I'm going to correct myself, because the word I always am told in education for what I would define as a team, but the word that's always used for district I'm in, those roles that work together, is the cabinet.
Oh, the cabinet.
The cabinet made this decision, which to me, I'm like, why don't they just say team? Like, it's a whole nother example to me, I guess, of the whole like, but we are the cabinet.
Well, but you know? It creates separation, like you just said, because it's the cabinet. It's the executive group. It's it's the president's advisory council.
Yes.
And you're going, well, wait, why does the president have an advisory council that doesn't include any of us who are living it every day?
Right.
Right.
You know, this hierarchy system has got to go.
Well, I mean, you're like, well, how do I get on the advisory council? It's like, well, you don't. If you're a teacher, if you're actually, if you're part of the team, you don't get to be part of the decision making. We hire the decision making out to the group that is the authority. Oh my God, it gets so messy.
Yes.
Sounds like we're having a little bit of a conversation about what does it mean to be a leader? What does it mean to be an administrator? I think those are very, very, very different. And I will frame it this way by saying leaders should have some good administrative skills, but being an administrator does not make you a leader. And I see way too many administrators, and I'm saying across multiple different occupations, different categories, not just in schools, but that whole idea of I'm now an administrator. And the assumption is that you've been appointed a leader. And it's like, sorry, to me, leadership is earned.
Well, and I think it has to do too with like values or like philosophy. Mm-hmm. Of like, is it just like, because I am an administrator, quote unquote, at the top, I am named the leader versus how I treat, you know, everybody within the school or, you know, corporation or whatever, like how I operate, how, you know, we choose to work together. Is that more what defines someone having leadership skills?
Now, and I'm posing it though to really, you know, I obviously people are going, Tim, you obviously have an opinion on this. I do. I think that they're, I do. I've just because I've been, you know, guess what? I now get to potentially cite my age as the potential that I have some thoughts and wisdom and seen some things. And a lot of high up administrators, as you point out, Teacher Hallie, over my 30 plus years of being in multiple places and multiple things, is that they're not always in any way, and some of them are horrible leaders. It is just because of the position that they are assumed a leader and realizing there's a huge difference between being in charge and at the top and being a leader. And maybe this is even to that question you start going, why is it that you might have a leader who doesn't need a consultant? I don't know.
Right. And I also think about then, I mean, what we haven't talked about, but I'll bring back full circle because I think it has to do with our Juneteenth conversation too, about also part of this hierarchy in schools is a school board. And like, do we consider school board members leaders? Do we consider them more just a position of power? And like, depending on who's there, what they do. I mean, I know school boards get to hire consultants too, you know,
right?
Or even legal, you know? So like, it's just, I mean, it's a very layered, like, issues within education related to this concept of leadership.
Oh, and you think about it though too. We got here by talking about Juneteenth.
Right.
If we were, you know, fully in a school right now in session, if we were in session, would we be even celebrating Juneteenth? Oh, and we got a text from Jim in Appleton. Different terms. The difference between a diplomat and a bureaucrat. I mean, that's what I'm talking about, you know, a leader versus an administrator, a diplomat versus a bureaucrat. And there's a connotation that one's better than the other people. Yes, there is a connotation that one is preferable above the other. And I'm okay with that because I've now seen bureaucrats and administrators that are really horrible at being diplomatic and providing a model of leadership. Sorry, you know, that's just the reality. And, you know, is that the reason, though, sometimes too, if you're hiring a consultant, is it just because you yourself don't have the skill set? I think that's one issue. Or is it also because the skill set you don't have really is leadership? And so therefore you're hiring somebody to make the hard decisions where a real leader would make those hard decisions. When it comes to Juneteenth, a real leader, if we were in school, we would be doing this. Busted pencils, Teacher Hallie, man, Educators Amplified. Love it. All right, everybody. Have a great night. See y'all tomorrow. Thanks, Teacher Hallie.
Bye. Thank you.
This is Oshkosh Air Support, WISS. Maggie Dawn.
It is day 16 and week 4 of Joe Biden's Top 100. Our theme this week, healthcare. You're not going to want to miss a single episode.
The Maggie Dawn Show, weekday afternoons from 2 till 4.
Are you ready to hit a home run with your business marketing? It's time to step up to the plate and get noticed with help from your local MVP senior account executive, Peter Van Doren. Whether you're a rookie or seasoned pro, I'm here to help you score big with unbeatable radio advertising and digital marketing solutions. Don't wait until the ninth inning. Get started now and let's hit a grand slam together. Contact me by email today, peter@civicmedia.us.
This is your local Civic Media radio station. Want to hear even more? Anytime? Find all of it at civicmedia.us. You're listening to Oshkosh Air Support, WISS 1100 AM Berlin, W252DR Oshkosh, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Brian Clark. President Biden spending the weekend at Camp David preparing for next week's debate with former President Donald Trump. He'll campaign today in Washington, D.C. and in Philadelphia. No ruling yet from the Supreme Court regarding the former president's request for immunity from criminal prosecution, but the court did rule regarding guns and domestic abusers.
A victory for advocates of gun safety laws.
They listen to survivors. They listen to us.
Lachey Krachan is lucky to be alive. The 45-year-old mother of two was shot 5 times by her ex-boyfriend in front of her daughter.
Because it's not a day, a minute, or a second that we don't think about it.
By a vote of 8-1, down, the Supreme Court upholding a law that prohibits people who are subject to domestic violence restraining orders from possessing a firearm.
That's ABC's Terry Moran. Meteorologists say more heat records could be falling today from Oklahoma City to Washington, D.C. This is ABC News. The man already convicted of breaking into Nancy Pelosi's home in 2022 and bludgeoning her husband with a hammer has received another guilty verdict, this one in state court in San Francisco.
Only a few weeks ago, David DePapp was given 30 years in prison on federal charges for breaking into the Pelosi home. Federal prosecutors argued he committed a terrorist act by going after the then Speaker of the House. Now a state jury in San Francisco has convicted DePapp again on charges of burglary, false imprisonment of an elder, and other counts. DePapp and his attorneys admit he broke into the Pelosi home to hold Nancy Pelosi hostage. They argue he had been consuming conspiracy theories online. Alex Stone, ABC News.
Taylor Wiley died at 56. The former sumo wrestler and UFC fighter became an actor. He was best known for his roles on Hawaii Five-0 and Magnum P.I. No cause of death was announced. I'm Brian Clark, ABC News.
Hi, I'm Smokey Bear, and I made an assistant to help you out. Because only you can prevent wildfires.
Hey, Assistant Smokey Bear, call me Papa Bear, because I'm...